I'm Josh Liston from On The Bubble Podcast, an oral history of television fandom, part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other awesome geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And welcome to Play Comics, a show where we look at video games based on comic properties and how well they stick to that source material. I'm Chris, and today I've got Justin Williams from Super Tangent. Justin, how are you today?
I was great until we started talking about The Crow, because this film sucks, and the franchise sucks.
There's a really big problem with that line of thought. That's what we're looking at today, for real.
Why? Oh, gosh.
I don't know. You picked
it. If we could dive. I thought you picked it.
I honestly don't remember. It's been forever.
It has. I was telling my wife, me and Chris had this plan for 7 years. And we both did other things. 7 years later, here we are talking about The Crow. Not The Crow. The Crow was a fantastic film. It was good. The Crow with Brandon Lee in the starring role was good. You know, had a cult following. Forgot who the director of that film was, but it was pretty good.
I actually stayed awake watching it this time because I was dumb and watched this movie.
But you did it. I'm proud of you. I think the universe is proud of you. And because that's a difficult life challenge to get through the Crow films. But the first Crow, you know, solid, not great, you know, but unfortunately, we're talking about the second one. What is it? Freaking City of Angels. It should have named this movie City of Pain, because that's all this film has brought me is pain and agony. And I will probably never watch this again. Now, here's a good question. Which is better, the film or the video game it's based off of? What do you think?
Oh, that's real tough. Because itself... I think part of the problem is that I watched The Crow this morning. Well, let me take that back. I watched The Crow yesterday. And then I watched City of Angels this morning.
Mm-hmm.
So the plot lines are really similar there. You have a character who this mystical crow comes, raises from the dead so that they can take out vengeance for their loved one. And they go around and they kill everybody responsible for killing them and their loved one. So it's very, very softcore revenge porn.
Yeah.
And if I hadn't have watched them within 10 hours of each other... I probably wouldn't have sat there wondering, hey, why am I watching the same movie again? That's just recast.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a soft reboot, really, of the first film. In fact, every film, four films, starring in it. And it's not like it's a different actor portraying the same character. There are four different main characters. So it's like watching four Batman movies back to back to back to back, but each movie stars a different actor playing a totally different character that takes up the mantle of Batman. So that part, I think, is interesting. I know in the comics, Eric is the main character, he's the Crow, and in the first film, Brandon Lee plays Eric, or a version of Eric, who is the Crow. The second film, it's some guy named Ash, and it's a totally different thing. So it is interesting how they, I think that's pretty cool. Nothing else is cool about The Crow 2. Except that they had the temerity to make a second film in the first place that had so little to do with the first one.
Well, that part does kind of follow the comics, though, because The Crow brings you back to life long enough for you to do whatever you need to do. So in the comics, they do have a bunch of people taking up the Crow Mantle. So that part follows along, and kind of, I feel really morbid saying this, it kind of works out with Brandon Lee passing during the filming of the first movie, because then it really just opens the door for, hey, we're just going to lean into this and get somebody to play a role for one movie and just move on to somebody new for each one.
That did work out in their favor. It would not, that wouldn't have worked with almost any other superhero, I feel. Maybe some other underground character. I mean, I didn't realize The Crow was based off a comic. First time I saw it, I was four when the film came out in the movies. So I definitely didn't know that. You're a kid and you're a nerd. You're really just kind of exposed to kind of the top tier A-list. You know who Superman and Batman are. You know who, you know, Spider-Man, you know, and whoever. The X-Men, you know who they are. But these underground characters, you know, Danger Girl, The Crow, and all these other IDW, Dark Horse, whatever, you don't really know who these characters are. So I didn't know for years that The Crow comic that the movie was originally based off of, which I thought was kind of cool, that it came, that it went from comic to film to video game. And my memories of, and I was saying this before we started recording, they made a video game of the second film and not a video game of the first film. I don't know why they did that. It was a poor decision, because they made a piss poor video game based off of a piss poor movie instead of finding a fun way to connect the two films in a very creative way, or kind of make the video game their own. I don't, you know, kind of like the Spider-Man movie video games based off of the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies did, like on the PlayStation 2. They took all sorts of creative liberties and added all sorts of really fun characters and stuff and storylines that weren't in the film, and made it a really full game. Bro, I mean, it was just like, I'm gonna beat people up. I hated everything about that game. I hated the vitality bar. I hated the little cutscenes. The 3D rendered backgrounds were like kind of neat, but the game was really visually dark. It was just a dark game, not like in tone, but like visually.
The only thing I can think of for why they wouldn't have made a game off of the first movie is that they didn't want to put out a game where you're essentially playing as Brandon Lee, because that is kind of morbid.
Morbid, yes. But if there's anything that Hollywood has taught me, it's that if you want to make a cult following, make sure tragedy strikes. Now, I'm not saying make money off of Brandon Lee's legacy because he's dead, but people lean into that kind of crap. To this day, I still wonder if, like, people would really have been praising Heath Ledger as much as they did for his role in The Dark Knight as the Joker if he were alive than if he were dead. You know, people like to think that they represent something or fight for something or honor someone, because when you die, you trend and you're invested in that. And when you're engaged in that, you're part of something bigger than yourself. I'm pretty sure there were tons of people who didn't even know who Heath Ledger was before The Dark Knight, but as soon as they saw the film and then realized he died, oh, hashtag RIP Heath, oh my God, best Joker ever, blah, blah, blah. But looking at it subjectively, you know, was he really the best Joker? And not to take away from The Crow, But just being in that mindset, like, if whoever wanted to make this video game really wanted to make this video game and make a very successful one, then even with someone else voicing the character, they would have made a game off the first one, because that would have rolled in the money. They would have made money off of Brandon Lee. And they know that they would have. And it would have been an extremely successful video game. Even if it were piss poor, it would have had a cult following because Brandon Lee's dead. So I think you're 100% right. I think that's probably why they didn't do it. I guess I'm surprised that they didn't. I think, quote unquote, the industry usually isn't that sensitive to issues like that. If anything, I think they're more ready to be exploitative than not. So again, in this case, I'm still pretty surprised they made a video game based off the sequel instead of the first one. But
yeah, more realistically, I think they just didn't think that the first Crow movie was going to be that successful. So they weren't planning on making a game. And then they made a game for this one because the first one was as successful as it was. And then the movie sucked ass.
Their mistake was making a movie based off the second one. They should have, even without Brandon Lee, they should have just, even if it was a completely original story with a completely original main character and all that stuff, they should have just called it The Crow, you know, and not say specifically this is based off of the sequel, because the sequel was bunghole. And I will keep saying that. You know what? I need to be a rain of sunshine today. I really do. What is something that's good about The Crow 2?
You hear the Deftones at the end?
Anything.
I really like hearing Deftones.
Okay,
so
the Deftones are in it.
Yep, before their first album came out,
are cool.
So that's good. I think this one does a better job.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, I had to look that up to get the timing right on it, but I did recognize it as them. I think this one does a better job of actually explaining kind of the Crow powers and where they come from. And mostly just the fact that you can hurt the Crow and that'll hurt the person, because the first movie never really did that.
Okay.
We have the Yellow Ranger.
I'll give you that.
She's a bad guy. So it kind of makes me wonder what Zordon saw in her to pick her to be a Power Ranger, but who knows?
Doesn't she get like thrown out of a window or something?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure she gets to finish it. It's hilarious.
Thrown out a window straight onto a car.
In this R-rated movie. Good for her. That's how you know. Oh, also, Iggy Pop. I had to look this one up, but Iggy Pop was definitely in The Crow too.
Yeah, that's a good one too.
And so was Thomas Jane. Yeah, Iggy Pop, Thomas Jane. I don't know a lot of Thomas Jane stuff. All I know is that that's the Punisher from like 2004, I want to say.
That sounds about right off the top of my head.
He played in some other stuff. Yeah, and he played in some other stuff. But it's interesting seeing a young Thomas Jane in this film. So I guess that's fine. It's been such a long time since I've seen this. Just putting the pieces together. Again, this is a movie I've been trying to forget. I am going against everything I believe in just by being on this podcast with you today. So I hope that you are happy.
Well, thank you for that. I mean, this movie...
I am in pain.
It's...
Pain, no.
It's not horrible. Like, if somebody wanted to watch it, I'd watch it with them.
Why?
I'd question their sanity and why I'm friends with them, but I'd watch it.
I would watch it if I were really... Maybe I'm just being bougie about it, but I have a standard for superhero movies, and I don't like the Green Lantern, right? I don't want to watch X. I don't know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. The first crow hit some basic foundational standards for me. First of all, the cinematography is pretty good. The music is fun, right? It really reflects a culture and a particular time where you just are really surrounded by a lot of angsty music that just really reflects how a lot of younger people felt around, you know, during that time. I just feel like that movie sits well with me in the same way that Spawn movie from 1997 sits well with me, you know, in some little ways. It just does do it for me. So if someone was like, I really want to watch this, and I watch it, also put a blind over my eyes the entire time and pretend to watch it. I don't want to watch this movie again. I really don't. To me, it's not horrible, but it's just horrible enough to not want to watch. It's not even like a fun horrible, like Street Fighter the movie. It's not even a fun horrible to me. It's just like a, man, the least they could have done was make it as good as the first film, which wasn't spectacular, but it was solid.
Yeah, I feel like my opinion on it is really tainted by the fact that I watched the first one the day before, and I watched the first one for free on Netflix and had to pay Amazon to watch the second one.
That, yeah, there is that. You see, now I have to watch this again and again and again. What I want to do, I don't want to watch the second one. What I want is the third and fourth one. Because I can only imagine how bad they are. I'm pretty sure, I think I read on Rotten Tomatoes when I was going through, like this list of movies that have like that has like a 0% on it. I'm pretty sure one of the Crow movies has a 0%. It cannot be the first one. Either the second, third, or fourth film.
Well, the third one has Kirsten Dunst, so that's not a horrible reason to sit through it.
Okay.
I got nothing for you on the fourth one.
Yeah. It's terrible. And they didn't make video games based off of the third or fourth one.
Thank God.
Maybe it should have. Maybe. I bet you the video games would have been better than the movies. In the same way how, like, X-Men Origins Wolverine, the film was just, like, one of the worst. Even though it might be solid by some merits, as an X-Men film, as a part of the franchise, it just stunk. It just did not satisfy in any way. But the video game based off of that movie was freaking phenomenal. Like, what the heck? That was such a good video game. X-Men Origins was amazing as a game. So I feel like if they went back and felt like doing a Crow video game now, or even then when the second and fourth films came out, I think it would have totally been better than the movie. Ugh, definitely the movie. Now the comic, I can't speak much on the comic, and I wish I could, but I never read the comic. It'd be interesting to compare the video game to the, I'm pretty sure the game is not based off the comic at all. I'm sure it's strictly based off the film.
Yeah, I know. One of the things that they did with making the second movie was they went and asked fans what they would want, and the fans said, you know, we would like to have a completely original story. After the comic writer who had written, I don't know how involved he was with the first one with writing it, but they at least got him to try to write the script for the second one, and he was still like all in his Brandon Lee headspace and just couldn't do it. So he told the studio, you know, yeah, go ahead, make a Crow thing. Don't make it in continuation of this Brandon Lee first movie story. Do a completely different thing, and right. I'm good.
Mm. Well, that was a good call, I think. I mean, with Hollywood movies and stuff like that, you know, the key word, I think, is franchise. And it's really difficult have so many corporate ideas that traditionally, statistically, make a franchise, a Hollywood franchise, thrive. Have certain trends you want to uphold, you know, like when Harry Potter, the movies came out, right? And then they made the seventh film and they split the seventh story into two movies. That was huge for Harry Potter. So all these other, you know, YA movies based off of films just did that too. Hunger Games did that. Who else freaking did it like that? The Divergent series was originally supposed to do that before it bombed so hard that they just stopped making them. So those sorts of trends work. And so when you have someone like the writer and maybe the main artist or whoever of like The Crow involved in a Hollywood production of his work, and he says, no, we need to stop it right here, or no, we don't need to continue this story, even though that's what works, I feel like that person has integrity. You know, they're not just trying to control the story. They're not just trying to whatever. I mean, he really outsourced the material, like you said, to the fans, to the people who are actually invested in it and see what they wanted. That takes guts to leave your baby in the hands of the fandom and not just, you know, basically have a corporate takeover, because that's what statistically is known to work. I don't think it worked so well in this case, but at least the fans, the real fans, got what they want. And I'm pretty sure that The Crow 2 is a cult classic for fans of The Crow. I imagine, right? Like, I didn't grow up loving The Crow. I just kind of see it from an outside perspective, you know. Some movies I can't. Avengers speaks to my heart. It's not just another movie. So I'm really biased towards it, you know, and to even Age of Ultron and Infinity War and especially Endgame, I'm biased to that. It's not just another movie for me. It's an experience. It has to do with so much of my life as an adult, as a child. The Crow, not so much. So I can just see it as a film. But again, I do appreciate the temerity and the integrity, I think, that went into this film. Because that was something I didn't know before. I didn't realize that much of the direction of the film and the storyline had to do with the fans. So that's pretty cool.
There's a lot of little interesting things in here like that. One thing I wish the movies did more of was kind of explain to you where the Crow powers come from and everything. Because the first one doesn't really tell you anything. He just comes back. The second one, you get, like I said before, you get where if you hurt the crow, then you hurt the person. And I was sitting there wondering where that idea came from, because they didn't say anything about it in the first movie at all.
Did that happen in the first movie? Because I don't remember if that happened in the
first
movie.
It didn't. And so it's, to me, it's like, okay, why are they adding this little element in here in the second movie? And until I went and, you know, watched some other YouTube video history, it's like, oh, okay, here's a real thing that was really in the comics. So that's cool.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's neat. And again, I mean, I feel like that's definitely a fan thing. If they didn't even put that in the first film, and, you know, they wanted the fans to put in had some specific input for the second film, then I'm pretty sure that's where that came from. And I can respect the film from that angle. I still don't think it's a great movie at all, but I can respect it in those little aspects, where those little details, because those matter. Those matter so much to someone who grew up on the comics. And so, yeah, I can definitely appreciate that. I think one of the most comic book accurate films that I've ever seen, as far as like superhero stuff or whatever, is a Watchmen from 2005, directed by Zack Snyder. In my personal opinion, that's Snyder's best film. It was unbelievably comic book accurate. And I don't think it gets enough credit for that. But what makes it accurate, I mean, the suits are a little bit different. The time is a little different. Or not the time, but I guess the timing of certain events. The way it ends is changed slightly. but it's the tiny, tiny little things that a regular moviegoer would just be like, oh, that's really cool. But a comic book fan would be like, oh my gosh, that is either completely right or completely wrong. And it can really change the trajectory of how you feel about the entire film. So I understand why they inserted those little things into the crow, like the physical crow, like being hurt and stuff like that, which is really interesting. Kind of acts like a voodoo doll. But that stuff is super important. So I'm really glad that they cared about the fans enough to, you know, put that in there.
Oh, am I making you appreciate it enough to want to go watch it again?
No. I would rather do anything than watch this again, except maybe Wolverine 4. But it's not that the production of the film doesn't have my respect. The way they went about it, you know, oh, that's great. It's wonderful. It's commendable. It doesn't mean it's a good film. It's just not. I wish it were. I wish to God I could support this movie. But in my heart, I just don't. Yen.
We're going to go reflect on the absurdity of my question there as we drop some promos for a few other shows.
You creep through the lush forest. Suddenly, a twig snaps behind you and you draw your sword.
Your neutron pistol shakes in your hand as you step into the abandoned starport. The comms are done.
Then you see her. Under the streetlight, a woman smoking a cigarette. Her sly smile reminds you of the witness.
She draws. Chestnut whinnies you hot tailor, but not before your arm tastes hot lead.
Many Realms is an actual play RPG podcast. Where to next?
Unsure if your Spider-Man is amazing or spectacular? Infinitely confused by Crisis on Infinite Earths? Or does the mere thought of X-Men continuity make you tremble? Then 4Panel is the podcast for you. Join me, Andrew, and my co-host, Robin Mick, as we guide you through the weird and wild world of comics. We'll talk about the secret origins of your favorite characters, delve into the craziest events of comics past, and review the hottest new graphic novels that you might have missed. That's 4Panel, a part of the Geek Show Podcast Network, available wherever podcasts are found.
Those are some great shows you should check out, but first let's finish up with this one. So, Justin, this you want to talk about something that'll make City of Angels look good. The game that goes with it, oh, crap. I mean, it's just crap.
Yes. It's terrible. And I don't know if there's any real differences between the Saturn version and the PlayStation version. You played the Saturn version 3,000 years ago. I played the PlayStation version. Never owned it. Have very few memories of it. And I kind of revisited those memories with YouTube videos and things like that. And it just kind of reminded me, yeah, this is not a fun game. I mean, back then, I didn't know what a good game was. I was spoiled. You know, like, I grew up like on the best video games of all time. You know, I was young enough to enjoy poor ones as well. This was definitely one of those poor ones. You know, fighting games are my games, particularly 2D fighting games are my favorite. That's my favorite video game genre of all time. But because of that, I also have a soft spot for beat-em-ups. 2D beat-em-ups, 3D beat-em-ups. They're just fun arcade style games, you know, like they're rich and you don't get that really anymore, I feel. Unless, you know, it's a home console online only or like a battle royale kind of weird thing. Or it's something that's only single player like God of War, which is fine. It's just not the same thing, you know. So I can appreciate aspects of the video game and what it wanted to be. But the execution was poor. I was watching YouTube videos of it recently. Is there even music?
There is. It's a real short loop. I mean, it's not horrible until you get to the fourth and fifth hearing it. Yeah, part of the execution here is just when the game came out. It was a...
Which was when? Was it the same year as the film came out?
Yeah. Well, the game came out in 97. So, I mean, you have this where they're still running around with their tank controls, turn with left and right, and move your character forward with forward, no matter what direction forward actually is. I would love to have somebody who's worked on games to tell me how that's easier than have left, move your character toward the left part of the screen. Because, like, if one game had done this, that would have made sense. Or if one company had done this, it would have made sense. But you had Grey Matter and Acclaim making this game like that. You had Capcom making Resident Evil and Dino Crisis. Like, I mean, Capcom knows what they're doing, and they're making it with this horrible control scheme.
Mm-hmm.
So for some reason, it had to be in their brain that that was better to do. And I really want to know why.
I mean, there is such a thing that exists where people just make poor decisions because they just want to stand out. Off the top of my head, I can't think of another video game that actually did that or something similar to that for the sake of just being different. Sometimes it works. Sometimes those things work. A really good example is Star Wars Dark Forces, which went on to evolve to become the Star Wars Jedi Knight, Jedi Academy, Jedi Outcast, with Kylo Ren as the main character. That was a first-person shooter, right? You were like a mercenary or a stormtrooper or something cool like that. Now, back then, you know, GoldenEye 007, the most popular first-person shooters were Doom, Wolfenstein 3D, and Dukeum. You know, one thing they all had in common was your ability. One, obviously, it's first person, so you're seeing it in that view, but you move left and right. Dark Forces, to my knowledge, is the first person video game shooter FPS where you had the ability to also move up and down. Like, that may not seem like a big thing now, because once GoldenEye came out, no other first-person shooters before it really mattered, you know? But imagine playing, Destiny is, or Overwatch, without the ability to move up and down. Like, how ridiculous does that sound, you know? So, I will always applaud a company, even if it's something as garbage as Acclaim. Acclaim is just a stupid company. I will give them props for trying to do something a little different, even if it fails, because someone's got to do it. I mean, if Lucasfilm never pulled that off with Star Wars Dark Forces, who knows where FPS games would be today, you know? What if they never figured it out until Destiny? How sad would that have been to have such restricted gameplay for games like Turok, like you were just talking about, and Halo, you know, and whatever. So, I don't know. Bad idea? Yes. But them trying to do something different, that's as far as that's going to go, because they shouldn't have done it. But I applaud them for trying something new.
Acclaim has done a ton of comic-based games. I'm not even going to try to say what some of them are, but down in the show notes, I will throw a link to just what I've covered on the show, and it is a literal ton. Grey Matter, on the other hand, made like 6 games. I had to go to Sega Retro to find it. They didn't even have a Wikipedia page, and this Crow game is the last Dear thing God. That they did.
I wonder why. Gosh, terrible. It's not funny. It's so not funny that it's hilarious. It breaks my heart. I've never heard of this. Grey Matter is their name?
Yep. I hadn't heard of them either. I went and was pulling up game information. As far as Sega Retro goes, and I'm trusting here that their information is going to be complete here. On the Genesis, they did Incredible Crash Dummies and Wayne's World. On the Game Gear, they did NHL All-Star Hockey. They also did that on the Saturn, along with NBA Action and The Crow City of Angels. The end. That's it. nothing else, and then they went away and they died. They didn't even stick around for Dreamcast, which is partly, man, you know, imagine what they could have done with Dreamcast. That stuff all looks so cool compared to Saturn stuff. But then it's also, oh man, imagine what they could have done if they tried to do something on Dreamcast. The best thing that they did,
that was awful.
The best thing that Grey Matter did outside of The Crow is probably Incredible Crash Dummies for Genesis.
Mm-hmm. They made that game?
They did.
That's one of those games that I remember like renting from like Blockbuster a long time ago and playing like once in my life, and that was it. Like, I remember being intrigued by like the cartoon. I wasn't really swept off my feet by the game.
One of my friends had it, and so I don't even remember which version he had, but I mean, I played it a couple times at his house just because it was there, and that was it.
Yeah. It's interesting, yeah, that... Yeah, I wonder too, what is Clem's relationship? Like, I guess the developers there are just really into like comics and stuff like that. It kind of, because like you said, they've made so many, it breaks my heart to think that this game was made in 1997 and it was as bad as it was. You know what else came out in 1997 for the same video game consoles? Freaking
I'm gonna let you say it just to see if it's the same thing I told my wife.
Well, for one, Final Fantasy VII.
That's exactly what I told Kaylee.
Two. Is it? I mean, obviously they're not the same game, but it's kind of like, dude.
They all had the same amount console of time to figure things out.
They freaking did. Tomb Raider 2 came out in 1997.
What? See, these people can know what they're doing.
Yeah. They could have got it right if they had taken a few months, even an extra year. The Crow City of Angels could have been the coolest games of 1997. I mean, I was in my room playing Star Fox 64. That came out in freaking 1997, I'm pretty sure. And speaking of Turok, I'm pretty sure that came out in 97. So, Acclaim. Oh, and Acclaim did Turok. I'm pretty sure. I'm like 3,000% sure that Acclaim did Turok Dinosaur Hunter. So, I'm just like, what were they doing?
They were putting all their good stuff into Turok.
With The Crow. Apparently. And the Nintendo 64, and not the PlayStation or the Sega Saturn. I mean, at this point, the Saturn was practically dead. I mean,
let's be real. The Saturn was dead the second they just announced that it was going.
Which is a shame, because the Saturn is one of the best consoles out there. In my personal opinion, time, it was definitely more powerful than the PlayStation. Their marketing wasn't good. Their games weren't grand. You know, they really stocked up on a whole exclusive Saturn exclusives, you know, and it's just like, dude, the PlayStation exclusives were just so much better. The 64 exclusives were just so much better. So anyway, I'm not going to get into that, but yeah, Acclaim. Shame on you. Shame on you.
You should have known better. You've proven that you can do better. It's not like you're LJN. Although you kind of are.
Oh, no. And their logos are kind of the same. They kind of like that colorful rainbow thing happening. It's not a coincidence.
Gotta love all that Nintendo rules of how much stuff you're going to publish.
The only thing I could think of that's worse than LJN is Color Dreams. If you've never heard of Color Dreams, you should YouTube their stuff. Just put in Color Dreams video games.
You should definitely not do that.
The nightmare.
Do not do that if you want to sleep at night.
You should do that. Color Dreams makes Acclaim look like Capcom. It makes LGN look like Capcom. I'm whatever. Not gonna get into it. Okay, bad things about the video game.
Yeah, the plot for the Crow City of Angels game, at least in theory, roughly follows the movie plot, you know, as much as any beat 'em up game is going to ever follow a movie plot.
Yeah.
They have an opening where you see Ash Craven and his son get killed, except not really, because this is 97 and they're still not going to do that, even though the game was rated mature.
Right.
And you just go around punching people and kicking people. Or at least punching and kicking at people. Because the hit detection in this one is not very good.
In the game?
Hmm?
No, it was like super moves or weapons, which is like a beat 'em up staple where you can pick some up off the ground, have kind of like an interactive environment, and like a stuff your enemies. Pretty sure that wasn't a thing in this game.
I mean, they had weapons, but that's about it. You also had your spinning around in 360 degrees and having to be pretty much anything.
Yeah, Ryu's hand kick would really come in handy right about now. But, and you could, I mean, there weren't any other playable characters either, were there? Just the Crow.
Nope, it was just the Crow. I don't know how you'd be able to sucker anybody into playing this with you anyway.
Well, that's true. That's very, very true. It was only one player, too. I'm pretty sure it was meant to be experienced in loneliness and desperation, in addition to misery. So you had to cry, you didn't have to do it in front of other people.
Exactly.
Well, we did. Shame on us.
I know. My secret's out.
If that's the only secret you have, my friend, I think you're pretty good in the running there. What else about this freaking? I don't remember like anything about like this game. I've never even seen the PC version. I wonder if it's shaped up a little bit better than the PlayStation and Saturn versions. I'm pretty sure it is.
I would hope so, just because modding is a possibility, but also you would have to have somebody who liked it enough to mod it, so I don't know if that kind of person actually exists.
Yeah. Probably not. I mean, I mean, you could be modding Quake 2, which also came out in 1996 or 1997. It's one of the best, you know, for in the galaxy. Pretty sure people were too busy modding that and looking at this game at the store and then buying it just so they could throw it in the trash and burn the trash with fire. Because this game is not worth the $10. And I pray that no one ever bought this game for more than that.
I never saw this game out at the flea market in any version. So I've never even had the stupid temptation to maybe buy it.
Well, good. Because you saved $10. And you can get a lot of candy for $10.
Just I'm really happy I didn't see the Saturn version, because then I would have saved like $20.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie, if I'd seen the Saturn version, I probably would have bought it.
Why?
Because it's a Saturn game. I mean, if it had a decent condition box, just like, hey, cool, I actually have a Saturn game with a good condition box, I wouldn't even care what it was.
I do like that kind of that retro feel of like a Saturn box where it's like super tall. Like the really, really, really old PlayStation games to do that too. Like the box was just, it wasn't just like this square, like an album would be. It was like this giant rectangle. I was captivated by that. I always thought that was really cool for Saturn games. I don't know why. I still bought this game. Not for me. No. I would rather put my head in an oven than pretend that I'm happy to be receiving this game that I did not ask for. It's awful. And yet, I almost feel like it needs to be played just so people understand.
Because where the movie isn't exactly so bad, it's bearable again, the game might be that bad. I have to play through enough stuff to where I don't want to waste my time on something that's so bad it's good. But this game is pretty close to being there if it's not there.
It's so bad that it's bad. I'm not doing it. Not if I'm going to relive my childhood memories. I'm going to do them with literally every other video game that was released the same year as this one. And completely ignore this one.
I can't blame you at all. 97.
Do you think...
I don't have to see a list at all. I know that there are much better choices.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. What else came out in 1997? Everything came out in 1997. Gran Turismo came out in 1997. Tekken 3 came out in 1997. I mean, anyway. Oh, fun fact, the first Grand Theft Auto came out in 1997. I had to look that one up. Anyway, enough of that. This game is not great.
This game also has your standard like Superman problem of you've got somebody who's basically invincible, and it's not a fun game if you're running around being invincible, because you need to have some consequences in the game. That being said, this game still sucks. So I don't know what could have possibly saved it at all.
Maybe if there was some sort of mission to do, right? I mean, video games changed dramatically with games like The Legend of Zelda, The Ocarina of Time, Super Mario 64, Metal Gear Solid. These games were mission-based video games, right? They were like, they weren't linear. They weren't A to B. They added this whole new dimension of video game play where, one, it's in full 3D, two, you're in a giant sandbox, you can practically go wherever you want and do whatever you want, and three, the gameplay wasn't you start at point A, get to point Z, it was go have fun but try to complete these very specific tasks in the meantime. That was very, very strange for video games, but it's the standard for almost all video games to come. Like, it was revolutionary. The Crow has none of that, I don't think. It's just literally stage one, beat up people. Stage two, beat up people. If there were some sort of goal or task or secrets to unlock, then yeah, the game would be worth more than a stale piece of white bread. But it is not.
It doesn't really tell you why you're doing anything. I mean, I guess you can pick that up from the cutscene at the beginning of the movie. But other than that, it's just, oh, cool. Here's people go punch and kick at them about the Crow and, you know, at least things that are relatively safe for work. That won't make us want to throw up.
Yeah.
What do you think this game really gets right compared to the movie?
Three rendered backgrounds. You know, not revolutionary for the year that the game came out. But at that time, there were still a lot of video games that weren't doing that. And some of those games still looked freaking amazing. But, you know, that was just something that they didn't have to do. And they did it. For all intents and purposes, it looked pretty darn good. You know, even a game like Final Fantasy VII, when you look at it subjectively, whether you think it's the best video game in the world or not, or of that year or not, or on the PlayStation or not, the graphics are clunky. They're choppy, they're chunky, they're blocky, they're bricky. It's you know, the PlayStation 1 graphics in 1997, you know, you're not going to expect anything much more than that. And so, you know, we look at, and honestly, I don't really came out for all the flack that Final Fantasy VIII gets from people. Graphically, its universe is better looking than Final Fantasy VII. Looking at The Crow, graphically, it's not a super ugly game. It's dark, not tonally, and I said this earlier, but just visually, it's a little too dark for me. Color palette, I don't enjoy that much. It's not a super long game to my knowledge, but it's just, I don't know, for all the things that stink about it, like, it's not an ugly game. You know, it's not the most beautiful sandbox that they put you in, but it works. For 1997, it works. And I've got to give it to that game just for that. You know, now, I mean, it's hard to compare a game to a movie visually, because obviously the game's going to look like a game, the movie's going to look like a movie. But that is something that I definitely appreciated about the game for the time that it came out. I think this was around the time kind of the Super NES era was just going away, really. At which point you had amazing games like Donkey Kong Country 2 and Killer Instinct, which were two of the greatest looking games for that entire generation of home consoles, you know. So they could have settled for that with this game. And they actually put at least a tiny bit of heart into it, into the way that it looked. Even if it didn't play well, it looks pretty darn good.
It definitely fits the feel of the movie, I think. I mean, the feel of the movie, I think, is why do you exist? They fit each other.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really trying to rack my brain for something good about this one. Because it's really hard.
It's not a lot good about it. It's really not.
I mean, the short version, what do you think this game really gets wrong?
Everything else. The game, okay. Beat-em-ups have to have something more for you to do than beat people up. Like, there is a thin line between simplicity and complexity where that little weird middle ground is exactly what you want in a beat-em-up. You don't want it to be this overcomplicated mess that adds in 3,000 other elements from 3,000 other different, you know, video game genres. But one of the this game is how monotonous it gets. You wouldn't think a beat-em-up game would get monotonous. You're playing a basketball game, entire game, all you play basketball, you know? Like, duh, why is it a bad thing? A fighting game, of course, you just gotta go and fight, right? But things that make these games successful is their little intricacies, their little idiosyncrasies, their complexities, right? You play Street Fighter or Mortal Kombat or even third games, Rival Schools, Virtual Fighter, you see that these games have maybe not interactive environments, things like that, but everyone has their own move list. Every character stands out. Every character is more than just punch, kick, punch, kick. They have special attacks and super combos and super moves that designate them as different than the other 8 or 18 or 28 or 30 or 48 characters on the roster. When you're in a beat-em-up, there are little tiny things like an interactive environment. You get to not just beat up human beings or aliens or robots or whatever it is that you're fighting in the context of the game. Pick up weapons. You get to pick up And I think you said, like, in Chrome, you can't do that a little bit. But in 2D fighters, especially, you pick up all sorts of stuff. Trash cans and, you know, food items that restore your health along the way, you know? And, then, of course, those care, even in those ups, you have really cool elements that distinguish it. And I feel like in the Crow, you don't have that. It's literally too simple, too monotonous. Complexity has issues as well. Any RPG when you first get up for the very first time probably feels a little too complicated to really mess around with, especially if you didn't grow up with them. And never feel way too simple either. And I think that's the main thing that nothing about the Crow, other than that, is the hero, and you punch and kick and kick and punch and punch and kick and kick and punch. And literally, you're not killing people, you're not frustrating people, you're not. And the movie has these special, like in the movie, it doesn't just kick and kick and punch. So I don't understand why in the video game they thought it'd be a good idea to just be able to do that, whether it's a boss or just a flunky throughout the normal stages. There's nothing special to do. And considering all your enemies do the same thing to you, just punch, kick, and punch and kick, you're not distinguished at all from like any other character, I guess non-playable character in this instance, in the game. You're literally, I mean, everyone in the game could just be like a slab of meat because they all do exactly the same thing. You know, slab of meat, different shirts on. And that's not how you do a beat 'em up. Even especially a 3D beat 'em up. You don't do that.
I'm still trying to figure this game out because, like, the only thing that really connects it to the Crow is the faces that they put on people. And that's really pushing it. So I probably don't need to ask you this, but if you had somebody who was interested in the Crow, would you give them this game as a bit of a primer course?
I would strongly warn against it. Just as a lover of video games, as a gamer, cinephile from enjoying film and film to game adaptations, if someone really wanted to get down and dirty with the Crow, I would say, hey, there is a game. If you can find it, you might enjoy it. I didn't, and I cannot personally recommend it as a gamer, but if The Crow is your absolute favorite movie, or you want to get into it, hey, check out. You know, there's a one of my favorite games on the PlayStation is a 2D fighter, of course, Gundam Battle Assault. Gundam is the anime that I've been obsessed with for probably 20 years now, since Gundam Wing came out in like 1999. In America, anyway, it was released in Japan in 95, but Americans are always late for everything. Awesome. And they made this 2D fighting game on the PlayStation 1. They made two of them, actually. Gundam Battle Assault. And the interesting thing about that game and why I love it so much isn't because it's necessarily a fantastic game. It's not. It's not even that great of a 2D fighter. There's a lot of good things about it, but for the most part, it's just like a meh, you know, just a shmer, meh, kind of game. Graphically, it's just like meh, you know? But I freaking love it because I'm a Gundam fan. Because I love the franchise, I love the anime, I love the manga, I love the novels, I love the movies. I'm obsessed. And I give it a whole lot of the game a whole lot more grace than it probably deserves because of that. I feel like a Crow fan would probably be the same thing. He or she would probably enjoy the game to an extent if they love the comic books and the movies as much as the creators that people would. They'd probably tolerate the game way more than the average human being, bless their heart, because they love the Crow so much. So, you know, yeah, I wouldn't recommend it to anyone. Really, just really had a thing for the invested, and yeah. But I would warn them. So, yeah.
Well, that's definitely not where I thought you were going to go with that.
Yeah, I understand one's love for bad things. I just can't get down with these freaking crow games and movies past the first movie. I've never, like I said before, I never read the comics. I'm sure the comics are awesome. And I wish I'd come across them at some point in my life. Like I had the movie, because the movie's enjoyable, the first one. But gosh, it's hard for me to swallow that second one, man. It's just a pill, but like a really big pill with really sharp knife-like edges. It's just hard to swallow. But I could see how someone could. It's just not me.
I guess I've kind of got to agree with you a little bit now, because, I mean, originally I was thinking, no, just go watch the movies. But if somebody, as long as this isn't their introduction to everything, I guess it's okay. Like, I wouldn't want them to go from the game to the comic. But if you go movie to game to comic, we can do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a big thing too, like, at what point are you being introduced to this thing? It would make a huge difference if the game were their first was introduction to the franchise, or they already experienced, you know, toys, comics, movies, and then played the game, or the game was somewhere in the middle. But yeah, if it was the very first thing, no way. No way. Like, the game attempts to supplement what's already there on its own two feet. It literally just, it is nothing as far as I'm concerned, and the game can be completely ignored. But again, you know, if you're really into the franchise, yeah, here's this one game. Unfortunately, it's not like Star Wars where there's a whole lot of good video games and a whole lot of bad games. You know, there's only one with the crows, just one, take it or leave it. And hey, you know, who am I to rob someone of something that they might possibly enjoy? You know? I love Mega Man 7. I love Mega Man 8. Most of the fans that I talk with online about Mega Man absolutely abhor those games. I still don't understand why. You know what I mean? But if they were going to be my first introduction to the franchise as a whole, I'd be pissed off if someone didn't show me those two games, because to this date, they're two of my favorite video games of all time, regardless of how subjectively bad they are to others. So I have to, as a nerd, I absolutely have to look at it from those lens. This could be someone's favorite video game. It will not be mine, and I never want to play it again. But if someone likes the crow that much, they might just like it enough. And they'll thank me later for it.
Well, on that note, if people like hearing... On that note, if people like hearing from you, where else can they find you around the internet?
Oh, I am on places. Mostly I'm on Facebook. Mostly. Now, you can find me on super-tangent.com. Super Tangent Podcast is my podcast. I'm on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. I'm on Spotify. I'm on Stitcher. I'm on Player FM. And I have 5 episodes that are still in need of editing that I'm planning to release this week, which is the week of November 24th. I've been kind of on a hiatus, doing a whole lot of other things, including putting some special emphasis into the podcast editing side project that me and my wife run called Go Team Podcast. And that's been really fun. Just making money off of things that you love doing is just lots and lots of fun. So we've been putting a lot of work into that professional service for other podcasters. Now we're starting to kind of get back to the motion of things and releasing casts every week and just trying to get on the bandwagon for the third season of the show. So I've been on a bit of a hiatus, but you can find me there at super-tangent.com. And you can find me on Facebook. That's the page for the podcast. Super Tangent Nerds and Knowledge is the group that accompanies the podcast. I don't usually post like or promote the show necessarily in that group. That's just where fans of the show and just fellow geeks in general and nerds can just sit and talk about stuff, you know, stuff that fuels the content for the podcast. It's not necessarily promotion. So if you're a nerd, you're a geek, you like the things that me and Chris talk about, feel free to find me at Nerds and Knowledge on Facebook. It's a totally open group. So if you're a nerd, you know, come join and hopefully that'll bring you to the podcast. I'd love to have more listeners. Not on Twitter like I used to be, and I'm not on Instagram, though I probably will get a new Instagram to promote the podcast, but I am mostly on Facebook. Come bother me, hit me up, and let's be friends, because right now I don't like you, and I don't like you because I don't know you. So we should talk so we can get to know each other.
And as always, you can head on over to Twitter at Play Comics Cast, or just go to playcomics.com and there's links to all the social media things there. You can also go over to the merch store where, hey, guess what? Down in the show notes, there is a coupon code that you can use to get some money off your order. I'm not going to tell you what it is because I'm going to be the mean person that makes you read the show notes. But I promise you that when you see what the coupon code is, you will at least get a little bit of a chuckle or say, hey, Chris, you're a giant dork. Why did you do that? But you won't be surprised at all. You can also check out the Patreon where, you know, you can get some behind the scenes looks, you can get some other cool things, and you can help support the show and just, you know, help make it the great thing that it is. Don't forget that Play Comics is part of the Gunna Geek Network, home to such wonderful shows as Gallifrey Public Radio, which is a weekly podcast that covers all topics in the Doctor Who universe, from episode discussions to classic story appreciation to comics, conventions, and audio dramas. The staff there spans the decades and regenerations with views from the hardcore enthusiast to the fledgling fan and all points in between. And as always, if you like the music that we're rudely talking on top of, you can head on over to soundcloud.com/best-day to check out Best Day's music. There's also a link down there in the show notes if you want to check it out. But most of all, just grab a game, grab a stack of comics, and go find yourself a new favorite character. Oh. Justin's. Justin's audio is going to annoy the mess out of me. So while we're doing that, here's some other games that came out in 1997. Mario Kart 64 came out in 97. Lost Vikings 2. If you don't know what that is, you should definitely go look that up. That is Blizzard before they went all World of Warcraft. So it's really good. It's kind of a puzzly game. Mega Man 8 came out in 97. Castlevania Symphony of the Night came out in 97. Need for Speed 2 came out in 97. What else? Harvest Moon for the Super Nintendo came out in 97. Final Fantasy Tactics came out in 97, at least if you're over in Japan. Very unsurprisingly, King of Fighters 97, that came out in 97. What else? Mega Man X4 came out in 97. GoldenEye came out in 97. Breath of Fire 3 came out in 97. Oddworld Abe's Odyssey came out in 1997. What else? Fallout, the first one, came out in 97. It's definitely not like what we're used to seeing now. What else? What else? Age of Empires came out in 97, although that was a computer thing that one of my friends was completely in love with. Mortal Kombat 4 came out in 97, at least on the 64. PS1, it came out in 98. The Curse of Monkey Island, that came out in 97. Pa Rappa the Rappa came out in 97. Crash Bandicoot 2 came out in 97. Diddy Kong Racing came out in 1997. Worms 2. Kirby's Dream Land 3 came out in 97.
Excuse me.
Bomberman 64 came out in 97. What else? Klonoa, Door to Phantom Isle, that came out in 97. Grandia came out in 97, at least over in Japan. Mega Man Legends came out in 97, although it was 2000 for the Nintendo 64, which is kind of a weird, why would you do that anyway? Yoshi's Story came out in 97. And right there at the tail end of the year, Mortal Kombat Mythology Sub-Zero came out in 97. Although, I mean, let's just kind of even exists. I mean, in March, you have the Nintendo 64 actually getting released in Europe and Australia. I'm pretty sure that one of those two regions covers New Zealand. For the most part, I think it's Australia. I've looked this up before, and it's really interesting where that counts for New Zealand, and also where it counts for Canada, because they get a lot of Europe-only stuff, or at least they used to a lot more. In October, you had the Super Nintendo Junior get released. And yeah, I mean, I'm just trying to stall at this point. Nintendo sued Game City for selling a Game Doctor and Doctor V64, which would back up Super Nintendo and N64 consoles and cartridges. That is kind of what led to ROMs being available, so that was cool, except they kind of got shut down. Nintendo sued Prima Publishing over copyrights to the maps of GoldenEye 007. Nintendo lost that one. Yay, strategy guides. Except they don't really exist anymore because of the internet. Nintendo sued Sony over copyrights about the Mario games. I have no idea what that one's about at all. I wish I did. Sega also announced the death of the Genesis and the Game Gear. Oh, you know what else was released in 97 that I totally didn't say anything about? Castlevania Symphony of the Night came out in 97. Yeah, that's all I got about the year of 1997. It's a weird year. The Marlins won the World Series. Pretty sure people were listening to Limp Bizkit. I don't know if Deftones had actually put out an album yet, although they were in the Crow City of Angels, so they could have put out an album. What else? It seemed about right for Rage Against the Machine's Evil Empire to come out in 97.
So, Justin, I think we've pretty much said everything we can about The Crow and, you know, at least things that are relatively safe for work that won't make us want to throw up.
Yeah.
What do you think this game really gets right compared to
a lot of... Let's see, what kind of bands popped up as Baby? forming or establishing in 1997.
Pre-rendered backgrounds.
Wow, this list
not
is
revolutionary for the year that the game came out. But at that time, there were still a lot of video games that weren't doing that. And some of those games were freaking amazing. But, you know, that was just something that they didn't have to do. And they did it. For all intents and purposes, it looked pretty darn good. Even a game like Final Fantasy VII, when you look at it subjectively, whether you think it's the best video game in the world or on the PlayStation or not, the graphics are clunky. They're choppy, they're chunky, they're blocky, they're bricky. It's the PlayStation 1 graphics in 1997, you're not going to expect anything much more than that. We look at, and honestly, I don't remember when Final Fantasy VIII came out, for all the flack that Final Fantasy VIII gets from people, graphically, it's universes better looking than Final Fantasy VII. Looking at the Crow, graphically, it's not a super ugly game. It's dark, not tonally, and I said this earlier, but just visually, it's a little too dark for me. The color palette, I don't enjoy that much. It's not a super long game to my knowledge, but it's just, I don't know, for all the things that stink about it, like, it's not an ugly game. It's not the most beautiful sandbox that they put you in, but it works. For 1997, it works. And I've got to give it to that game just for that. Compared to the movie, it's hard to compare a game to a movie visually, because obviously the game's going to look like a game, the movie's going to look like a movie. But that is something that I definitely appreciated about the game for the time that it came out. I think this was around the time kind of the Super NES era was just going away, really. At which point you had amazing games like Donkey Kong Country 2 and Killer Instinct, which were two of the greatest looking games for that entire generation of home consoles, So they could have settled for that with this game. And they actually put at least a tiny bit of heart into it, into the way that it looked. Even if it didn't play well, it looks pretty darn good.
It definitely fits the feel of the movie, I think. The feel of the movie, I think, is why do you exist? But they fit each other.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really trying to rack my brain for something good about this one, because it's really hard.
It's not a lot good about it. It's really not.
The short version, what do you think this game really gets wrong?
Everything else. The game, okay. Beat 'em ups have to have something more for you to do than beat people up. Like, there is a thin line between simplicity and complexity where that little weird middle ground is exactly what you want in a beat 'em up. You don't want it to be this overcomplicated mess that adds in 3,000 other elements from 3,000 other different, video game genres. But one of the killers of this game is how monotonous it gets. You wouldn't think a beat-em-up game would get monotonous. You're playing a basketball game, all you play basketball, Like, duh, why is it a bad thing? A fighting game, of course, you're just going to go and fight, right? But things that make these games successful is their little intricacies, their little idiosyncrasies, their complexities, right? You play Street Fighter or Mortal Kombat or even three games, Rival Schools, Virtual Fighter, you see that these games have maybe not interactive environments, things like that, but everyone has their own move list. Every character stands out. Every character is more than just punch, kick. They have special attacks and super combos and super moves that designate them as different than the other 8 or 18 or 28 or 30 or 48 characters on the roster. When you're in a beat 'em up, there are little tiny things like an interactive environment. You get to not just beat up human beings or aliens or robots, whatever it is that you're fighting in the context of the game. Pick up weapons. You get to pick up, and I think you said, like, in Crow, you can't do that a little bit, but in 2D fighters especially, you pick up all sorts of stuff. Trash cans and, food items that restore your health along the way, you know? And then, of course, those care, even, like,
well, Justin, we're doomed. Oh, boy. So this is the episode that is so bad, doesn't even want to get released, it looks like. And I don't know what to do about that. So, yeah, we will try to figure it out.
Am I back yet?
Okay, you're back.
Okay, I'm so sorry. I don't know why that keeps happening. I think it's just where I am. I think it's just a little flaky.
I see what you did there.
Anyway, to continue what I was saying, hey, and I will give you everything that I was saying before you let me know that we stopped because I have it recorded in Audacity.
Okay.
But picking up from where I left, like, in those ups, you have really cool elements that really distinguish it. And I feel like in The Crow, you don't have that. It's literally too simple, too monotonous. Complexity has issues as well. Any RPG you first get up for the very first time probably feels a little too complicated to really mess around with, especially if you didn't grow up with them. And never feel way too simple either. And I think that's the main thing that gets wrong. Nothing about The Crow, other than that, he's the hero, and you punch and kick and kick and punch and punch and kick and kick and punch. That's literally it. You're not killing people, you're not frustrating people, you're not. And the movie has these special, like in the movie, he doesn't just kick and kick and punch. So I don't understand why in the video game it ought to be a good idea to just be able to do that, whether it's a boss or just a flunky throughout the normal stages. There's nothing special to do. And considering all your enemies do the same thing to you, just punch, kick, and punch and kick, you're not distinguished at all from like any other character, I guess non-playable character in this instance, in the game. You're literally, I mean, everyone in the game could just be like a slab of meat because they all do exactly the same thing. You know, a slab of meat, different shirts on. And that's not how you do a beat 'em up. Even especially a 3D beat 'em up. You don't do that.
I'm still trying to figure this game out because, like, the only thing that really connects it to The Crow is the faces that they put on people, and that's really pushing it.
Yeah.
So I probably don't need to ask you this, but if you had somebody who was interested in The Crow, would you give them this game as a bit of a primer course?
I would strongly warn against it. Just just as a lover of video games, as a gamer, separate from being a cinephile, separate from enjoying film and film-to-game adaptations, if someone really wanted to get down and dirty with The Crow, I would say, hey, there is a game. If you can find it, you might enjoy it. I didn't. And I cannot personally recommend it as a gamer. But if The Crow is your absolute favorite movie, or you're just, you want to get into it, hey, check it out. You know, there's a, one of my favorite games on the PlayStation is a 2D fighter, of course, Gundam Battle Assault. Gundam is the anime that I've been obsessed with for probably 20 years now, since Gundam Wing came out in like 1999. In America, it did anyway. It was released in Japan in 95, but Americans are always late for everything. Awesome. And they made this 2D fighting game on the PlayStation 1. They made two of them, actually, Gundam Battle Assault. And the interesting thing about that game and why I love it so much isn't because it's necessarily a fantastic game. It's not. It's not even that great of a 2D fighter. There's a lot of good things about it, but for the most part, it's just like a, you know, just a shmer, meh, kind of game. Graphically, it's just like, meh, you know? But I freaking love it because I'm a Gundam fan. Because I love the franchise, I love the anime, I love the manga, I love the novels, I love the movies. I'm obsessed. And I give it a whole lot of the game a whole lot more grace than it probably deserves because of that. I feel like a Crow fan would probably be the same thing. He or she would probably enjoy the game to an extent if they love the comic books and the movies as much as the creators hoped that people would. They'd probably tolerate the game way more than the average human being, bless their heart, because they love The Crow so much. So, you know, yeah, I wouldn't recommend it to anyone. Really, just really had a thing for their bested, and yeah, but I would warn them. So, yeah.
Well, that's definitely not where I thought you were going to go with that.
Yeah, I understand one's love for bad things. I personally just can't get down with these freaking Crow games and movies past the first movie. I've never, like I said before, I never read the comics. I'm sure the comics are awesome. And I wish I'd come across them at some point in my life, like I had the movie, because the movie's enjoyable, the first one. But gosh, it's hard for me to swallow that second one, man. It's just a pill, but like a really big pill with really sharp knife-like edges. It's just hard to swallow. But I could see how someone could. It's just not me.
I guess I've kind of got to agree with you a little bit now, because, I mean, originally I was thinking, no, just go watch the movies. But if somebody, as long as this isn't their introduction to everything, I guess it's okay. Like, I wouldn't want them to go from the game to the comic. But if you go movie to game to comic, we can do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's another big thing, too, like, at what point are you being introduced to this thing? It would make a huge difference if the game were their first was introduction to the franchise, or they already experienced, you know, toys, comics, movies, and then played the game, or the game was somewhere in the middle. But yeah, if it was the very first thing, no way. No way. Like, the game attempts to supplement what's already there. On its own two feet, it literally just, it is nothing, as far as I'm concerned. And the game can be completely ignored. But again, if you're really into the franchise, yeah,
here's this one game. Unfortunately, it's not like Star Wars where there's a whole lot of good video games and a whole lot of bad video games. Take your pick. You know, there's only one with the crows. Just one. Take it or leave it. And hey, you know, who am I to rob someone of something that they might possibly enjoy? You know? I love Mega Man 7. I love Mega Man 8. Most of the fans that I talk with online about Mega Man absolutely abhor those games. I still don't understand why. You know what I mean? But if they were going to be my first introduction to the franchise as a whole, I'd be pissed off if someone didn't show me those two games, because to this date, they're two of my favorite video games of all time, regardless of how subjectively bad they are to others. So I have to, as a nerd, I absolutely have to look at it from those lens. This could be someone's favorite video game. It will not be mine, and I never want to play it again. But if someone likes the crow that much, they might just like it enough. And they'll thank me later for it.
Well, on that note, if people like hearing... On that note, if people like hearing from you, where else can they find you around the internet?
Oh, I am on places. Mostly I'm on Facebook. Mostly. Now, you can find me on super-tangent.com. Super Tangent Podcast is my podcast. I'm on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. I'm on Spotify. I'm on Stitcher. I'm on Player FM. And I have 5 episodes that are still in need of editing that I'm planning to release this week, which is the week of November 24th. I've been kind of on a hiatus doing a whole lot of other things, including putting some special emphasis into the podcast editing side project that me and my wife run called Go Team Podcast. And that's been really fun. Just making money off of things that you love doing is just lots and lots of fun. So we've been putting a lot of work into that professional service for other podcasters. But now we're starting to kind of get back to the motion of things and releasing podcasts every week and just trying to get on the bandwagon for the third season show. So I've been on a bit of a hiatus, but you can find me there at super-tangent.com. And you can find me on Facebook. Look up Super Tangent. That's the page for the podcast. Super Tangent Nerds and Knowledge is the group that accompanies the podcast. I don't usually post or promote the show necessarily in that group. That's just where fans of the show and just fellow geeks in general and nerds can just sit and talk about stuff, you know, stuff that fuels the content for the podcast. It's not necessarily promotion. So if you're a nerd, you're a geek, you like the things that me and Chris talk about, feel free to find me at Nerds and Knowledge on Facebook. It's a totally open group. So if you're a nerd, you know, come join, and hopefully that'll bring you to the podcast. I'd love to have more listeners. Not on Twitter like I used to be, and I'm not on Instagram, though I probably will get a new Instagram to promote the podcast, but I am mostly on Facebook. Come bother me, hit me up, and let's be friends, because right now I don't like you, and I don't like you because I don't know you. So we should talk so we can get to know each other.
And of course, we'll have links to all that down in the show notes. And I will do the rest of this later because I'm getting booked about dinner.
Well, food is important. It's a priority. It's more important than other people and podcasts and the planet.
I definitely have to stop. Definitely send me what you have. I'm going to report.
Oh, I definitely will.
Yeah.
Do you want it as a wave or an MP3?
Wave.
Okay. In that case, I'll probably put it through the Google Drive that you gave me a link for.
Mm-hmm.
I probably can't. It's going to be too big to send it any other way. So I'll upload it to Drive, and then
you have Gmail anyway, though, right?
Yeah.
Because when I've tried to send things that were too big, it has just decided, hey, I'm going to use Google Drive.
Yeah. Yeah, Google Drive will be fine. I'll put it through there, and then life will be good.
All right. I will let you know if I randomly find somebody else about that thing, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Keep me informed. I mean, yeah.
All right. I have to run away before I die.
Awesome.